Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
I'm the only one, and I'm proud of it.
He was the only person to have served as mayor of both Duluth and Superior, and one of very few people elected to significant office in two different states.
I moved to Duluth knowing I was going to run for mayor in Duluth.
Herb Berkson has died at 65. Plus, how much does it cost to win an assembly seat in Wisconsin?
There were multiple races in 2020. Where state Senate candidates each raised $1 million.
We'll look at the numbers as the electoral season begins. All that and a regional news and review after this.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
I'm the only one, and I'm proud of it.
He was the only person to have served as mayor of both Duluth and Superior, and one of very few people elected to significant office in two different states.
I moved to Duluth knowing I was going to run for mayor in Duluth.
Herb Berkson has died at 65. Plus, how much does it cost to win an assembly seat in Wisconsin?
There were multiple races in 2020. Where state Senate candidates each raised $1 million.
We'll look at the numbers as the electoral season begins. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We begin with a program note. A musical segment originally announced for today with the group Vanilla Bloom and its founder, Jacob Cloutier, will be heard next week. The change is due to the death yesterday of former Superior and Duluth Mayor Herbert Berkson at age 65. It was announced in a Facebook post by his brother, Brian Berkson, saying he had died after complications from cancer surgery. Berkson was the only person to have served as mayor of both Duluth and Superior, and one of only very few people elected to significant office in two different states. In October 2019, he joined us in our Superior studios for what was likely his last in-depth interview. By then, he had endured well-publicized adversity due to his very well-publicized struggles with alcoholism, and his weakened voice came across as shocking to those who knew him in his prime. But he was nonetheless upbeat, as you'll soon hear in this rebroadcast of that conversation, which notably occurred on Indigenous Peoples Day. Its significance is one of the accomplishments that he proudly discusses. Here's my conversation from October 2019 with former Duluth and Superior Mayor Herbert Berkson. Welcome to Simply Superior. You've been on different incarnations of this show over the years, so you're not a stranger.
It's been a while, but, I left town for 11 years, and I'm back.
Has it been that long?
11 years, yeah.
Well, we'll go back through the history. Tell us what you're doing now.
Well, I'm retired. I get Social Security. I'm looking to volunteer at a homeless shelter. I don't need a job. You know, I just try to do things for people who need help.
Sure. And you just turned 63 recently.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago.
Great. Well, so you are in a pretty unique company. If I were to put out the names Sam Houston, Mitt Romney, and Herb Berkson, what do they have in common? And then somebody suggested to me Hillary Clinton, too, but I'll get to there's an asterisk on that.
The answer is they all hate Donald Trump.
I don't know about Sam Houston, and I don't think we're going to get the chance to ask him. But what they are maybe better known for is, or more documented, is that they served in elected office in two different states. So Sam Houston was the governor of Tennessee and then later a senator from Texas. He was actually president of Texas at one point. And Mitt Romney was governor of Massachusetts and is now currently a senator from Utah. You were, of course, mayor of Superior, two terms, and mayor of Duluth. Do you have any idea if anybody else has served a mayorship like that in, they don't have to be adjacent cities, but in two different states?
I'm the only one, and I'm proud of it.
Okay. Well, you should be. It's a unique company there. The reason I said, by the way, Hillary Clinton.
Well, there's governors and stuff, but I was a mayor.
Well, there aren't too many governors and stuff either. And Hillary is the Aunt Stuff because she was First Lady of Arkansas and then Senator from New York. She obviously today is better known for an office she didn't win. So, but First Lady is an elected office, so that really at best is an asterisk. So, and you've had a colorful career. One of the colors I think you're most proud of is pink.
Yes, my best friend is gay. I have a lot of gay friends. And today is Indigenous Peoples Day. I changed that in Duluth. We were the 14th city in the country to change it.
Mm-hmm. We're recording this, by the way. Our conversation here is on Monday, formerly Columbus Day.
It's not Columbus Day. Right. He was a slave trader and a murderer. And I have a lot of Indian friends. It's not okay. So I'm just proud of it.
Mm-hmm. More than your friends, you were the first Duluth mayor and or superior to recognize or proclaim Pride Day. Fill in the blanks for me there.
Yeah. That's where I saw you, was at the reception, the mayor's reception. I'm proud of that, too. I proclaimed it once in Superior and four times in Duluth. I'm very proud of it.
Against a somewhat formidable opposition?
Oh, God, did I get hate calls? Oh, jeez. I got so many hate calls. You know, the homophobes, they called and said I was going to hell. What, because it's okay to be gay? Good Lord, it's okay. I don't watch people in their own bedroom.
Well, what year was it in Superior that you proclaimed it?
1980, you're trying my memory now.
Okay, we can look that up.
I'm going to get it. 1980. Okay,
That's fine. Look it up. We'll
look it up. It's been too long.
Right. So that was, of course, one accomplishment, even if there are people who don't look at it as an accomplishment. The world has changed greatly since then. I don't know of too many cities, at least in states like Minnesota or Wisconsin, that don't have pride recognition, let alone the fact that gay marriage is a fact in this entire country.
My best friend is married to a man. Mm-hmm. I worked with him as a cop. Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Sure. So that's part of your legacy. There's, of course, the other part of your legacy that maybe people, I'm not going to say overshadows or not, but you know, obviously your first OWI kind of stands out in your career. And I want to get to other things, accomplishments of your career, too. What kind of struck me was when that first accident happened, you had said, I'll never drink again. And although I'm not an expert in this field at all, that immediately struck me as a promise that is very difficult to keep.
I quit for 3 years, and I started again.
Right. Were you surprised yourself, or?
Well, I quit and didn't have anything for 3 years. I drank Diet Coke, and I just got anxious for a beer. That's all I drink is beer.
Mm-hmm.
And water.
And water, right. Are there lessons you would like to impart to others who are struggling with the struggle is the main word here. This is not something that's easy for anybody to do.
Yeah, I just quit. I just live with my dog. It's her and I. We take walks every day. We clean house. And I don't have a girlfriend, so what the heck?
Well, you've got a faithful dog.
Lucy's a good kid.
There you go. Right. And one thing you said proudly when we were talking about this interview and I was giving you directions, you said you take the bus. So for people who don't do that very much and who think that if they, I don't know if you've lost your license or not, but if they do, that that's the end of the world. The cheerfulness in with which you said that, I cover transportation in another life of mine. And buses are there for a reason. They're to be ridden, and we need more people on them.
I could drive if I wanted, but I gave my car to my son. Mm-hmm. And the next day he sold it. All my kids owe me money, and what the heck. I'm good. It, you know, I'm just three blocks away from happiness. I go down the hill. Tonight I'm going to go watch the Packers lose. Why not?
Three blocks from happiness. That's great. I probably want to know what that address is. Right?
It's Mitch's in Lincoln Park. Mm-hmm. I go down there. I got lots of friends there. I enjoy it. I like talking to friends. Mm-hmm.
But isn't that the atmosphere that you try to stay away from, or how does that work?
Oh, I'm not staying away from it now. I have a beer now and then. Mm-hmm. People there call me Herb instead of Mr. Mayor. I hate being called Mr. Mayor. I'm just Herb. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you've reconciled the, you've come away from your first pronouncement of never have a drink again, and that, you know, that's an impossible, well, maybe not impossible, but very, very difficult vow to keep, and it isn't that simple.
Yeah, I just, you know, I get anxiety attacks. I get bad ones, and I get prescription drugs to help me, but a beer helps. You know, you drink a beer and it relaxes you. I when I get anxiety attacks, my whole body shakes. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm. I think I have to sort of responsibly go back to the driving. You said you can drive, or you do?
Yeah, I can. I gave my
should
car
you?
To my son.
Do you think you should?
I gave away my car. Why pay for all that stuff when you can ride the bus for free? I get a monthly card.
Okay.
It's $40, but you get the whole month free.
Right. Are there any restrictions, like an engine lock or interlock device that you're supposed to use?
If I drove, yeah. But
it's a moot point as long as you've got your DTA pass.
You got it right, buddy. Okay. You got it right.
Right, right. Let's go back to some of your accomplishments as mayor of the two cities. Again, in addition to simply the accomplishment of having been mayor, actually, I suppose that's probably the most important question about that. What in the world made you want to run for mayor of Duluth after you were mayor of Superior? And I know it didn't just happen that simply. You were a police officer and then a detective in Superior. You served two terms as mayor. You crossed the border. You had to live in Duluth to run for mayor of Duluth. They may be the twin ports, but they do have a bay between them and a river. And then you served as a city councilor. You ran for mayor once and lost, and then you came back a second time. Why? I mean, I suppose I can ask Mitt Romney the same question, but I'm asking
it
you.
It was a plan. I moved to Duluth knowing I was going to run for mayor in Duluth. It took a while, but, you know, I was an underdog, but I won. I beat, I don't know, about eight other people. I'm not sure. I beat a lot of very famous people. What the heck? Mm-hmm. I have a picture of election night. it wasn't a bad move. What the heck? I worked on retiree health care. I did some things I'm proud of.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get to retiree health care, but okay, so you crossed the border deliberately. Was not an accident. Before that, Superior, other than proclaiming Pride Day, what are you most proud of? What needed to be done here, and what did you do?
My city planner and I, we had a seven-step plan. We built buildings in downtown Superior. I was after Bruce Hagen.
And before, as it turned out.
Both. You're right.
If you have a distinction of having served in two towns, he's got a distinction of having served two most interesting non-consecutive terms.
Oh, he passed now. I feel bad about that. His wife was always kind to me. I like her. We changed the old grocery store at Belknap and Tower into the library. And we did the senior center. Mm-hmm. We did five other things downtown, but it's too long to explain.
Sure.
It was all good stuff.
The library is there today?
Oh, it's still there, yeah. I went there 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. And Duluth?
Retiree health care. Mm-hmm. That cost me getting reelected, but I fixed it. They were $300 million in debt, and the unions just hated me for it.
So I attended the Duluth Superior Area Community Foundation Touchstone Awards the other day, and Sandy Sandbolt was giving a talk.
Oh, Sandy's a good guy. I love Sandy.
Well, there we go. I'm not quite sure. We didn't get into whether or not he loves you, but he talked about retiree health care and his work consulting on part of it. And he lauded or mentioned Don Ness as, at that time, Donnie Ness, because he hadn't shortened his name yet publicly, as a city councilor had alerted, at least since Sandy's telling of the story, various people on the unsustained or non-sustainability of the retiree health care debt. And for those who are not quite versed on it, it meant that retirees were promised a certain amount of benefits that they were going to get if they put in years of service to the city, like in any operation. And it turned out that that was not sustainable to the tune of, as you said, $300 million. So a package was worked out. Sandy gives credit to Donnie as a city councilor for pushing this through and said he sort of suggested that he didn't get complete support of the mayor at the time, who he didn't name, which would be the person I'm sitting across from right now. How did that go in Herb Bergson's telling of the story?
That was my plan. Donnie Ness took credit for it. When he got elected, it was mine. I put everything in place, and he changed the name so he could take credit for it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to ask him about that. No matter who takes credit for it, and maybe it's not a matter of taking credit for it, it did happen under your administration.
It was $300 million.
Right, which is down to about $100 million today, I understand. Right.
Yeah. I don't know why they bought that movie theater over there. That makes no sense to me.
Oh, the North Shore?
$2 million to buy a theater? That's ridiculous. Why does a city own a movie theater?
To preserve some history. But good questions. You have every right to ask them, and I won't give an opinion one way or the other. But on retiree health care, though, so does that stand out to you? That's one of your proudest moments?
That, and this is going to sound silly, the dog parks.
Okay. There's two of them, I understand.
Oh,
right?
No. There's six or seven of them.
Ah, okay.
I guess the cozy bar is coming down. I'll be honest, I don't much like Eric Ringsred. He used to own the North Shore.
Mm-hmm.
he owns the Cozy and he's trying to fight demolition, but it looks
And for purposes ugly. Of fairness, I would point out whether you like someone or not has nothing to do with your character as a good person or not. Yes.
Well, I don't like Eric, okay.
I mean, you do have to give him credit for trying to preserve things, whether you agree with the way it happened or not.
Okay.
All right. Again, for listeners who may not be aware, the Cozy Bar is in a fairly historic building that has had fires and all sorts of problems. And the bar, when it was operating, was not necessarily the best neighbor for the neighborhood. Right across from the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial at downtown Duluth.
The Clayton Jackson McGee thing. Oh, that's the best. Henry Banks is a very good friend of mine. Carl Crawford's a good friend.
These are people who, of course, Henry's a former colleague of ours at Wisconsin Public Radio and a co-founder of the memorial.
I love
Crawford, an early person on it.
Looking at that place, the old city hall where the guys were hung, shame on those people. I talk to Henry a lot on Facebook. Okay. And Carl, I bump into Carl now and then.
Right. Well, trying to contain all these years of Duluth's history and your parts in it, I see as this conversation becomes very wide-ranging, is a little bit difficult to do. But if nothing else, it's pretty clear you're in the history books, certainly for your geographic accomplishment, along with Mitt Romney and Sam Houston. Herb Bergson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rob. I appreciate it. Can I call you Rob?
Robin, actually. Yes.
Okay. I'll call you Robin then.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was my conversation from October 2019 with Herbert Bergson, the only person to serve as mayor of both Superior and Duluth. Bergson died yesterday at the age of 65, and our condolences go out to his family and everyone he touched. Coming up, how much does it cost to win a seat in the Wisconsin State Legislature? After this.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view. Gathered to mirror your life and interests with the goal of helping you to understand the world we live in and the region we hold dear by sharing the stories and information you'll enjoy and want to hear.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So now that we're more than a month into 2022, I have the pleasure, or duty, to remind you it's an election year, even if you haven't quite recovered from the last one. There's no presidential contest, but all the seats in the U.S. House and the Wisconsin Assembly are up for grabs this fall, and you'll hear from those jumping into the races soon enough. What you may not hear about is how much money will be behind them. And if the recent pass is any indication, it won't be a small amount, even in what might seem to be relatively minor races like the assembly districts in our area. Keeping track of those campaign donations is the Badger Project, a nonpartisan and nonprofit watchdog group based in Madison. And with me is Peter Cameron, managing editor of the Badger Project. Welcome to Simply Superior, Peter.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So what's a normal amount of cash for a candidate in seats like ours that, you know, used to be in these remote places that nobody really cared too much about, except we care about them? The 73rd District, that includes Superior, or the 74th covering Bayfield. They usually don't buy TV ads or anything like that. So, you know, how much could they actually spend?
I mean, how much could they spend is the sky's the limit. How much? Normal changes every election. So Janet Buley, state senator up there, also the Senate minority leader now, in 2014, her first race for Senate, she raised a little bit over $100,000. And she won that seat with about 51% of the vote. So she's a tight race, you know, $100,000. In 2018, she had to raise more than $300,000. And we'll get into why the money's going up in a moment. But 2022, my guess, you know, it's going to be, I don't even know how much it could be. It could be $1 million. But then she just recently announced that she's not seeking re-election this year. There were multiple races in 2020 where state Senate candidates each raised $1 million each. And it's raised and spent. So you're talking about $2 million raised and spent for a state Senate campaign. And state senators make, their salary now is $55,000 a year. So if you want to be a state senator and you're in a swing district where there's going to be a lot of competition, you might have to raise $1 million to win a seat that pays you $55,000 a year.
As I listen to your economics, every time somebody says $100,000, that used to be the benchmark for a house, depending where you are. And, you know, with COVID and the whole remote working and the effect that has on smaller areas and people with more money moving into our areas, housing prices have gone up, but not up to $300,000 that quickly, and then up to $1 million. I would love to have that kind of appreciation from an investment point of view. But on the other hand, you're supposed to budget, right? Your expenses versus your income. $55,000 doesn't quite match $300,000, let alone $1 million.
Exactly.
So who do they raise money from? Because it's one thing to raise $100,000 in, again, a small district like ours. $300,000, $1 million, you probably have to go outside the district.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I'm going to do this slowly because it's complicated and it confuses myself. So I'm sure it'll confuse people that are just hearing it for the first time. So the state of Wisconsin previously, 10 years ago, had a cap on how much one person could donate and could make political donations in 1 year. Used to be $10,000 a year. And then after that, you were done. You couldn't donate to anyone anymore. But in 2014, the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, said that those aggregate caps on political donations were unconstitutional. You know, they were a violation of First Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. And so that blew up that cap in Wisconsin. The Supreme Court has said that caps on direct campaign donations are still constitutional. So if I want to donate to Rebecca Clefish for governor, Tony Evers for governor, there's a $20,000 cap there. But the aggregate caps, just the total caps, are unconstitutional. What that did in Wisconsin is there's now a loophole. You can make any amount donation to political parties. So there was never a cap on political parties, on what you could donate to political parties in Wisconsin. But that aggregate cap, that $10,000 aggregate cap, essentially served as a cap on political parties. When the Supreme Court blew that up, now there's no cap on what you can donate to political parties. And anybody in the country can write a huge check, and they do, they have. We'll get into that in a minute. And then so the political parties can raise tons of money, and then they can sort of filter it out to candidates across the state. And that's a big reason why you're seeing this explosion in spending. J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, who's, I think the Pritzker family, they have their Hyatt Hotel heirs.
Correct.
He wrote a check to the Wisconsin Democrats for $2 million. Just wrote a check, here it is, $2 million, and then they can sprinkle it around, give it to whoever they want. Diane Hendricks, she's the CEO of ABC Building Supply in Janesville, Beloit area. She does that every election year. She's cutting a check for $1 million exclusively to Republicans almost.
Right. So there's a balance there, except you had $2 million and $1 million, but I'm sure the Republicans will find another million to balance that out completely.
Yeah, right. I mean, there. I can list a bunch of names to you. I mean, George Soros made a big donation to the Democratic Party.
We won't go there. That'll be a whole show.
We'll stay away from Soros. But I mean, there's the Uline's in Chicago. They have the shipping company Uline, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, and they're big Republican supporters. They cut a $1 million check. So that's a big reason why your TVs and mailboxes are going to be flooded with political ads for these little state Senate, state assembly races, is because of that cap being removed by the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Peter Cameron, the managing editor of the nonprofit and nonpartisan Badger Project, which is tracking spending in, well, our local races for Wisconsin State Assembly. So I mentioned this earlier that they're not buying TV ads, or at least historically they've not been buying TV ads for our smaller districts. But again, what are they spending the money on?
So, I mean, across the state, I don't know about your area specifically, but radio, you know, any broadcast ads, TV ads, radio ads, mailers, pamphlets in the mail, a lot of, and of course, online advertising. I mean, you'll probably start seeing on Facebook. But that's, you know, just advertising, lots of advertising. That's mainly hammering each other via the radio, you might start seeing TV ads up in your area this year. We'll see. Senator Janet Buley just recently announced she's not running for re-election, kind of a surprise to me at least. And because she had told me previously that she was planning to run again. This was a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, that'll be an open seat this election period. And yeah, I'm sure the Republicans would love to pick up that seat. They'd love to pick up any seat, but they'd love to pick up that seat because it's a swingy seat. And her seat, if Republicans could win her seat, they would have a supermajority in the Senate. And what mm-hmm. that means, let's say Tony Evers wins this year in 2022, and you get another 4 years of a Democratic governor. If Republicans can get a supermajority in both the Assembly and the Senate, then they can do whatever they want. They can override the governor's veto. So if the Republican-controlled legislature passes something, the governor doesn't like it, he vetoes it, says no. With supermajorities, the Republicans could override the veto, do whatever they want. So, I mean, that now we're getting into the maps and gerrymandering and things, and still unclear how those maps are going to be set for the
election. I do want to say why this all matters. It, of course, matters who we elect and who we send to represent us. But Janet Buley's seat, Beth Meyer's seat, Nick Milroy's seat have all been fairly safe Democratic seats. And yes, the redistricting did happen. We have a whole podcast on it mapped out by my colleagues at Wisconsin Public Radio. You can look that up on our website. And basically what's happened is some seats that were safe Democratic seats are now competitive thanks to the way the districts were redrawn. And their seats are indeed part of that. We can look at the margin of, just very, very narrow victories, right? Nick Milroy's contest, the last contest, he won by just 139 votes. And I'll go on to say why it matters is if the, as you point out, the Republicans have a supermajority and totally control the Wisconsin legislature, then they have more power in the state. And that reflects nationally. As we know, Wisconsin is a swing state that very much helps decide the presidential contest. So did I say everything in a nutshell there, why it matters?
Yeah, Republicans don't have supermajorities yet. They're very close. Mm-hmm. So they cannot override the governor's veto, but they're close and they obviously want that. So that's just important to note that they aren't able to do that yet. And the new maps, when the Supreme Court decides for us, they could be,
the state Supreme Court, right?
Right, the state Supreme Court. And the maps right now favor the Republicans so much that new maps could favor the Democrats slightly. You know, they, mm-hmm. they still favor the Republicans on net, but it could move things a little bit to the left. So we'll see how that will affect races up by you folks.
Let me play a devil's advocate, although we are very much nonprofit, non-commercial broadcasting, nod to my broadcast colleagues on the commercial side. What's wrong with spending money? What's wrong with putting, particularly on the local level, if anyone's buying flyers and things like that, isn't that a good thing?
Well, it's good if you have a printing company or if you have a local TV station or radio station, you're selling a lot of ads. I mean, the candidates would probably tell you that they have to spend a lot of time fundraising, and that's mm-hmm. less time that they can spend being an elected representative, where a lot of them like to go out and talk to constituents, see what's going on, what the problems are, maybe writing bills. I mean, a lot of times that's why people get into elected politics, is to write bills to fix a problem or something. So when you have to spend, I mean, when it's an arms race every election, and the amounts you have to raise go up every time. That's just time that your elected officials have to spend as salespeople rather than your representative in Madison.
We again are speaking with Peter Cameron. He's the managing editor of the nonpartisan, I will stress nonpartisan, and nonprofit Badger Project. Tell me what you guys are planning on doing, how you're looking at this year.
Sure. First, I'll tell you, I'm trying to refrain from predictions. I keep guessing things wrong. every time. So the universe keeps teaching me, you know, lessons in humility. So I'm not going to make any predictions.
I mean, well, not to mention the 538 in the 2016 election, right?
If I'm yeah, that's just one of many. One of many.
Good old Nate Silver. Yes.
Yeah, one of many that I guessed wrong too. But I mean, one prediction I'll make that I'm pretty confident about is that you're going to see a lot more spending in campaign finances raised and spent in your races up there. And I mean, Janet Buley had to raise $300,000 in 2018 to win, and her opponent actually outraised her. And so I have no idea what the final total is going to be, but it's probably going to be a lot. And, you know, you might start seeing TV ads with the amount of money they're going to have. One important thing I wanted to say was that, so this, we talked about this Supreme Court case that removed the aggregate cap. Republicans in Wisconsin, they've controlled the legislature now for a while. They also doubled direct limits to candidates. So it used to be you could only, the most a person could cut to a candidate for governor was $10,000. They doubled that. It used to be $1,000 to state senator. Now it's $2,000. It used to be $500 to state assembly. Now it's $1,000. And so Republicans did that. They did this in 2015. So 16, 18 Republicans kind of won the fundraising game. But in more recent years, 2020, it was really left-leaning liberal donors sort of dominating the donation game. So an interesting thing is that, you know, maybe Republicans will end up regretting loosening campaign finance law in the state because it did benefit them initially, but now liberal donors from across the country are kind of spreading money out. And of course, in a swing state like ours. So that's just kind of an interesting wrinkle for everyone to consider.
And I'm wondering, as you said, a swing state and very important state like ours, what's the largest you've seen statewide, which could be a bellwether for how some of our districts are going? So you said ours are up to 300,000, could get up to a million. What local assembly or state senate race, what's the largest one you've seen in the state?
Good question, Robin. So you can read all about it on our website, www.thebadgerproject.org. But yeah, we looked at several races like this, swing districts in the state Senate. So there's in Green Bay is kind of a swingy area, La Crosse kind of a swingy area, Milwaukee suburbs, and Stevens Point area were all kind of swing races. And the record of all time is about 2.2 million in a couple different races, one in that Milwaukee suburb and one in Green Bay. So yeah, you're talking about candidates having to raise $1 million to raise and then spend $1 million to win a seat that pays you $55,000 a year.
Well, of course, they're not in it for the money, they would tell you.
Well, they don't get it. Yeah, I mean, they're not seeing that money.
I want to go back to what I said also about local development advocate or local economic development, and that it could help our area. And you said, yes, if you got a printing company or a local TV station. But you mentioned online ads. And the last time I looked, Facebook wasn't quite a local company, correct?
Not unless they've moved to Superior.
Well, that's an idea. If we can get Facebook to move to Superior, we'll redo this entire conversation. Somebody wants to run right now. What would you tell them?
Well, you're going to spend a lot of time fundraising. I mean, the parties are helping you out. I mean, when I say you need to raise $1 million.
Well, let me rephrase that. Somebody wants to run right now. And, you know, a local person started out by looking at a broken stoplight at the street corner and say, well, somebody ought to fix that. They got it done. Everybody looks at this person as a hero and says, you ought to run for office. What do you tell them?
I say do it. I say it's, you know, the more people we have involved in electoral politics, the better. I mean, the more competition, the more candidates we have, I think that's good. But I think, yeah, people just, they find out that there's just a lot of time that needs to be spent fundraising, and then the gerrymandered maps make it tough for to win. I mean, really for both parties, of course, when the Republicans drew the maps, and so that favors them. But the way you guarantee, the way a political party guarantees they can control the House, the Senate and the Assembly is that you have to throw away all the opposition votes into other districts. So that creates safe seats for Democrats and safe seats for Republicans. So then you don't have many swing seats. You don't have many competitive seats. So that's a problem if you're a Republican in one of these districts where they threw out all the Democratic votes, it's really tough to win. So it's really bad for everyone that you just don't have competitive seats. One thing, actually, let me just go on a little tangent here because it'll be interesting to folks in your area. So your congressional seat up there, Dave Obey, held it for like 800 years.
805, and, I think it was.
40 years, Dave. So a progressive Democrat held that congressional seat up there. And then in 2011, Republicans were able to redistrict, and they threw Stevens Point, kind of a blue liberal college town, and they threw it into the Western District that Ron Kind used to represent. Mm-hmm. So it really looks like a gerrymander. It makes that Western District look kind of like a dinosaur. But ironically, your district up there has become so red and so right-leaning that now they want to throw that blue Stevens Point back into it, bring it back now, because now at the time when they did that, that Western River District that Ron Kind represented, and you know, Eau Claire and La Crosse, that was very blue, and your northern district that Tom Tiffany has now was more swingy. But now both of them have moved kind of to the right. So Republicans want to re-gerrymander and move Stevens Point back into that northern district, because it doesn't matter for you guys. It's such a deep red district now, and they think they have a shot at that western district. But just an interesting gerrymandering fact there.
Going back to the bunny, though, you know, could that be as red as it is? We still have pretty blue areas of Superior and Ashland. You know, could somebody throw a lot of money in there and change people's minds?
Yeah, I doubt it. In 2018, Democrats really won the money battle. They had a lot more money. It was, as you know, 2018 was a very Democratic year, the midterm where Trump was president and Democrats came out and really voted hard, but liberals dominated the spending, and yet they still couldn't even really make a dent in the legislature or congressional maps. So that just shows you the power of redistricting and the power of gerrymandering, is that you can throw all this money, all the money in the world against it, but the maps favor the party that draws the maps. So if Jeff Bezos wanted to get involved in Wisconsin and drop a $1 billion check, I don't know that that's enough to defeat the fact that the political party draws its own maps.
All right. We've been speaking with Peter Cameron, managing editor of the nonpartisan and nonprofit Badger Project, which is keeping track of the amount of money being spent in political races throughout Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, the regional news and review. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Robin.
Danielle Kading, our Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, is off today, so Rick will have to handle all the news ourselves. And what's been happening on both sides of the bay, maybe starting with Duluth?
Yes, Duluth Mayor Emily Larson does not plan to extend the 30-day mask mandate that's slated to expire Saturday, February 12th. She announced this at a Wednesday afternoon news conference, and she had issued the emergency masking order on January 14, when there had been a dramatic increase in cases of COVID-19, and the highly contagious Omicron variant had spread throughout the Northland. Since then, however, the number of coronavirus cases diagnosed locally has spiked and then started to decrease. And she noted that she consulted with medical and public health officials before deciding to let the mask mandate lapse. She did add, however, that businesses and organizations remain at liberty to enforce their own individual masking rules, and that the city will continue to require the use of masks in their own municipal buildings. The masking order will remain in effect until 5 p.m. Saturday.
All right. Well, if I trade my face mask in for a high-altitude oxygen mask, I could fly an F-16 fighter jet, perhaps. And apparently there's an opportunity for me to buy my own landing strip, or at least the stuff that goes around it.
Yes, there is. If you have about $800,000 burning a hole in your pocket, You could own a Cold War radar station on the North Shore. There's 100 acres where the Finland Air Force Station used to operate, and that is for sale for about $800,000. The former radar station, located on Lookout Mountain in the unincorporated community of Finland Lake County, was established in 1950 and used until 1980. The base used several equipment systems over the years to track and identify passing aircraft, especially to monitor and potentially intercept any enemy aircraft entering the United States from Canada. Today, though, the radar systems are gone, and as are all but one of the buildings on the main site. The property has been listed online for sale since June 2021. It was put up for auction in November 2019, but the highest bid was only $216,000, and it did not meet the minimum bid. Some of the site's original Air Force housing is still standing. There are some two- and three-bedroom homes as well. But buyer beware, the Finland property has been under the MPCA oversight for cleanup since 1989, and they've been doing some soil excavations there in the 2000s and removing a bunch of contaminated soil, and it is considered a Superfund site. So anyone that purchases that property should know about that as well.
All right, a real opportunity or a challenge. You've got some sobering news about one of our local Olympians, but not from the curling team.
No, one of Duluth's most accomplished athletes announced this week that she has a rare neurological disorder that affects her ability to run. Kara Goucher, 43 years old, announced over social media Tuesday that she has been diagnosed with repetitive exercise dystonia. The two-time Olympian and 2007 World Championship silver medalist in the 10,000 meters said she began dealing with symptoms in December 2020. She said she had a hard time staying on her feet while running and that it felt like she was slipping and that she'd have to throw her arms out for balance. And after a fall, she ended up seeing a doctor at the behest of her husband, Adam. She was diagnosed with the runner's dystonia. And she had mentioned on social media as well that the doctors have told her as gently as possible that continuing to run will not only affect her adversely, but it may make it difficult even to walk. So she is processing this very sobering news and says that obviously running has been a big part of her life and that she's not sure what the future holds, but she's trying her best to embrace it.
Well, we definitely wish her well. And we can't go away without talking about the aforementioned Twin Ports-based Olympic curlers. There's been some celebrating and more activity with the Schuster family in Superior, I understand.
Yes, chants of USA, USA echoed through the halls of Great Lakes Elementary School a week ago Friday in Superior. A parade of students were walking through the halls, waving torches made of tinfoil, construction paper, cups, tissue paper, and more. At the head of the procession walked 8-year-old Luke Schuster and his 6-year-old brother Logan, waving American flags. They were doing this in a nod to their famous father, who carried the American flag during the opening ceremonies for the Winter Olympics in Beijing, China. That morning, they had watched their father do that, and so the school had set up a fun parade to honor that. That parade was a culmination of a lesson encompassing geography and research. Each student had to come up with one fact about a country that was not the United States. They designed their own torches for the procession and learned why they now release balloons instead of doves at the start of the Winter Games. Luke Schuster said it was awesome being able to carry the flag around the whole school and that it's been really great how they've been supporting him and his brother the whole way.
And given that we are recording on Thursday morning, and of course the games happen a time difference away, and you can see it online live, or you can see it tape delayed, what, as of Thursday morning, is the status of, well, I'm going to say, our Olympic curlers?
Yes, they're off to a decent start. John Schuster's rank opened up competition there in Beijing with a 6-5 extra end victory over the Russian Olympic Committee. But then in a rematch with Sweden, which had defeated for the gold medal in South Korea in 2018, they ended up losing that match 7-4. So as of Thursday morning, they are 1-1.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Our theme song was written and performed by Bruce Nelson of South Range, and we leave you with music of next week's guest, Vanella Bloom. Stay safe, everyone.